Welcome back to Observation. Some time ago, before we left to discuss the really despicable history of the Christian New Testament in terms of its fidelity, its reliability, its accuracy. And we devoted a number of observation shows into Yada Yada Radio to that. We had just begun our review of Yashaya. And we dove into Yashaya, Isaiah, hoping that we would make it all the way to chapter 14. Because by having studied the Mizmor and the Psalms, we came to recognize that Yahweh was expressly encouraging us to avoid being ensnared in religion. And he spoke of the whore, of being a manifestation of Satan that was created to be alluring so as to seduce people into worshiping Satan as if he were God. And as we read further, God associated Pauline Christianity with this whore and with religion and with the plague of death and with Satan. So I knew that Yashaya made the connection between religion and the whore and between religion and the whore and Babylon and then between those three things and Satan. So religion, the whore, Babylon, and Satan over the first 14 chapters. So the goal was, rather than make claims that a connection, that the whore represents religion, that the whore is Satan, that Satan is Babylon, the living manifestation of Babylon, that the whore of Babylon is in fact Satan, and that these things are all a manifestation of religion, and particularly Christianity. I thought if we made our way through Yashaya, we could prove it. Now, as it turns out, of course, Yosha, to the extent that we can trust Revelation, in the last three or four chapters of Revelation, made this absolutely clear by identifying the beast and the whore and Satan and Babylon with that which grew out of Rome, the Roman Catholic Church. And so it's all there, but knowing how unreliable the Christian New Testament is, and recognizing that we have the entirety of the Yashaya scroll dating back to 300 BCE, that seemed like a much more credible place to make these connections, thinking, you know, we'll probably learn a lot along the way. So that's why we dove into it. And what we're going to find is that the entirety of the first two chapters, essentially from beginning to end, is Yahweh bemoaning the pervasive and debilitating nature of religion throughout Yisrael and Yehuda, and how religion has been so caustic to the relationship that he desired with his people, that ultimately by the first verse of the third chapter of Yashaya, God is saying that at this point, whoa, pay attention. I'm going to withhold my provision for life. And so we were confronted by a very profound statement there. And at that point, I think those of you who have listened to this program over a period of time know that for the last month I have been devoted myself to understanding precisely what God has provided as the substance of life, to support life, and to demonstrate why it had been withheld. And that is becoming the 9th and 10th chapters of Observations for Our Time. But let's now go back to the beginning of Yashaya, Isaiah. And let's start in chapter 1. We'll catch up to where we were before we took the detour into the research that demonstrates that the Christian New Testament isn't even remotely reliable. This is how it begins. The revealing communication of Yashayahu, meaning salvation, is from Yahweh. son of Amoz, meaning the trustworthy and steadfast, whereby beneficially he compiled and revealed a written prophetic record of the covenant relationship concerning Yahudah, means related to Yah, and Jerusalem, the source from which teaching and guidance regarding reconciliation and restoration flow. In the days of Uzziah, which means boldness and empowerment are from Yah, Yotham, Yah was perfect, Akaz, he has grasped hold, and Yakiz Yah, strengthened by Yahweh, rulers of Yahudah, the beloved of Yahweh. Well, there's a lot there. We have been over all this before, but one thing I did not mention in the previous times that we went over it, how in the world could Yotham mean Yahweh is perfect if the Wah in Yahweh wasn't pronounced as an O?
Good point.
It would be impossible, wouldn't it? It's just like Yoel, Yahweh is God. There are some 30 or 40 Hebrew names that are contractions of Yahweh and some other word that have been contracted to Yo and that word. And the only way that that would make any sense is that if it were Yahuwah as opposed to Yahuwah or just Yahweh. That's where they're getting the O. You know, a great example would be Elohim. If you look up El and Elohim, you will not see a Wah in either El or Elohim. So how would Elohim have the O sound if there's no Wah there? Because it's a plural contraction of Eloah. And Eloah is has the Wah creating the O sound.
O-A-H.
Yep. So anyway, it's interesting that that if you'll take the time, Yahweh provides provide overwhelming evidence that for everything that's important, and sharing His name is amongst the most important things to Him. His name being communicated, His name being summoned, is so important to Him that He provides the instruction for it. You know, I was thinking as I was just driving home, I had an appointment out today, and I was coming back home, and I was thinking about the someone who had written me recently and, you know, was all flabbergasted about, you know, leaving the Christian comfort of constantly praying to God. And he said, you know, you write constantly that God never asked us to pray and that, you know, you don't pray to Him. You know, so what are we supposed to do? And I was just thinking about how utterly ridiculous the Christian position is. I've got the opportunity to listen to the Creator of the universe, to the Author of life, to the most interesting, inspiring individual in the universe. I've got the opportunity to listen to Him. Or He can listen to me. Which one of those sounds to you like it might be more?
Never mind if you ask, what does that mean?
No.
Help me to understand.
But, you know, but even in that regard.
I know.
Even in that regard, do you think, Kirk, that He needs you to say, help me understand, when you're sitting at there looking at a word in the midst of His testimony, and you're trying to understand it, do you think at that point that you telling Him, you know, I'd really like to understand this, do you think that that somehow adds to His understanding or incentive?
No. Okay. No. Just shut up and listen. You know, when I go up all the spiritual,
and by the way, when
you go to the guy on the mountaintop and listen to him.
Uh-huh.
Christians don't do that.
Yeah.
Maybe they understand. There's the wise man. Go listen to the wise man.
Right. You know, I find that I've been afforded, and I'm not unique in this regard. You're afforded it too.
Huh?
The opportunity to listen to the testimony of God. And I find Him brilliant. I find him completely entertaining. Sometimes he's funny. Sometimes he's uplifting. Sometimes what he has to say, tug at your heartstrings.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm prepared to listen to him for all eternity. And, you know, and I'm quite content if the entire contribution that I have to our dialogue is, wow. Wow.
You're
oh, wow. Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Yeah, wow. Oh, wow, now I get it. You know, if I am limited to a wow and just don't drool all over myself,
I'll do that enough.
I am going to be content. You know?
It's a lot of wows.
Yeah, it's a lot of wows. And so, anyway, that's what we're doing here is we're listening to God. Guess what the next, you know, I love to go off on these rants, and I love to come back with God affirming what we just said. The next word is listen. Spiritual realm, and choose of your own accord to pay attention and respond. Material realm, because Yahweh has spoken. Now, I really want to listen to what he has to say here. I have a choice. You have a choice.
Yeah.
We can blabber on, or we can listen to what he has to say. What he has to say next is as important as anything that has ever been said. I reared my children, lifting them up, helping them grow, and enabling them to be great. And I raised them, taking them to a higher place. But they have actually rebelled against me.
Why, that's sad. That is.
Well, it's both sad and wonderfully uplifting.
Yeah.
I mean, when you have the creator of the universe, the author of life, the biggest of the big, I mean, this is the most extraordinary individual in the universe, multiplied by infinity times infinity times infinity times infinity times infinity times infinity. And he is saying that rather than manipulating people, rather than doing something that ought to somehow impress us.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying, you know, I took the time that here's the thing that I most want you to know. I reared my children.
I told them, yeah.
I lifted them up. Oh, my God, this idea of getting down on our knees to worship God and lift him up and praise. God damn Christianity. Muslims bowing. Prostrating themselves in prayer to a God who says, no, I lifted my children up. That'd be as stupid as a child bowing down and prostrating themselves to their parents. What are you trying to turn God into?
Yeah.
Oh, an insecure, sadistic monster? But here's God saying that the single most important thing to him, I raised my children. I lifted them up. I reared them. I helped them grow. I enabled them to be great, taking them to a higher place. This is the God of the Torah. This is the real God. This is Yahweh. This is the individual who conceived and who embodies and who conveyed and who owns the covenant. This is what he's offering. And by the way, it's all that he's offering. He's not offering to save us.
No.
He's offering to lift us up, to raise us, to rear us, to help us grow.
Exponentially.
Now, right. Exponentially. Taking us to a higher place. When we as parents help our children grow, then we'll protect them, sure. And as a parent, Yahweh is going to protect us. That is absolutely true.
Yeah.
But it's a byproduct of rearing us. It's a byproduct of taking us to a higher place. It's a byproduct of rearing us, of treating us like his children. So I don't know what you could have God say that should resonate more than that. And by the way, is there a family religion? You know, when my wife and I had two kids, did we say, okay, here's the religion of our family?
No. I wouldn't use that word. I mean, there's a...
No. There's no such thing as a religion of a family.
No.
We didn't say, here's the politics of our family.
No.
We didn't say, here's the military of our family. Here's the patriotism of our family. We didn't even say, here are the laws of our family.
No.
I said, you know... When our children were old enough to understand, we say, you know, we do have some rules. We have some conditions.
Oh, we have to live together.
Yeah, to live together, here's some conditions. You know, we're if you decide to do drugs, well, we'll still love you. And you're not going to live here. You're not going to live here in this house.
You're bringing it here,
right? If you get involved in serious violent criminal behavior, you're not going to bring it home here. You know, there are just things that you're not going to do and live here in this home. You know, you're not going to use vulgar language or threaten other family members. So, anyway, there's this. God is saying, I established a home. I mean, he didn't say I established a religion. He didn't say, I established my religion and I established my laws. And you were subjected to my laws, and you didn't obey my laws, and I established my religion, and you weren't religious enough. And that's what the...
Total Christian.
Yeah, that's the Christian
view. You can't find it. Torah.
Right.
Anyway.
Right. And here's God saying exactly the opposite. He's not saying he established any laws. He didn't say the people failed to obey his laws.
No.
He didn't say that he created a religion and the people weren't religious enough. He didn't say the people failed to place their faith in him.
No.
No. He said that I was your father and you rejected me.
So you mean the first thing that he said to Adam wasn't, hey, believe in me. And Adam looked at him and was like, okay.
Say what?
Okay. Who are you? I don't have a name. Just believe in me, all right?
Or use any name you wish.
Use any name you wish. Okay. Dodo Bird. I like Dodo Bird.
You will call me the Lord. That's what he said, right?
Oh, yeah. I am your master.
Yeah.
Obey me.
Down. Let's get the ring.
Yeah. So let's establish the religion of Eden, and let's establish the laws of Eden.
Do not look at me when you talk to me. You just
no.
Just talk.
He just said, "Yeah, I have some rules. If you want to live here, then I've given you all the stuff you can eat and all the stuff you can do, but there's a rule. Don't go and eat from that tree."
No, that's the bad nutrition there. Don't eat the bad.
Yeah, well, actually, you know, it's actually not necessarily so. It was the tree of knowledge of good and evil.
Well, yeah, that's true.
And so what it did is it
they couldn't handle it.
Yeah, it gave individuals, and first was Chawa and Adam, but it gave them the ability to choose between those things,
yeah,
to use one or the other. And of course, the flood had to occur because man had chosen to be evil.
Yeah.
And knew how to be evil now. I mean, really knew how.
Oh, they worked at it.
Yeah, they worked at it.
They developed.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, it's just a stunningly important frame of reference. You know, I always say that frame of reference is the single most important part of understanding. I probably say that context is the single most important part of understanding. But even before context. His frame of reference. And it is why I don't think you should even attempt to translate Yahweh's testimony until you come to know him well enough so that your frame of reference is grounded in the Torah, that your frame of reference is as consistent with Yahweh's as you can be.
That's every time I read a translation, a typical English translation, King James, New American Standard, that glares at me constantly. That is, they're looking at the exact same Hebrew word that I'm looking at. They're looking at the exact same.
Yeah, actually, the King James.
They go off on a tangent. I don't.
Yeah, that's really not.
Obviously, don't know Yahweh.
Yeah, that's not completely. That's not
stuff about Yahweh.
Right, that's not completely true. It was whoever translated
is done on purpose. But
I'm going to say that they're not looking at the same words, and the reason they're not looking at the same words is that there is no English translation of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. Other than the Masoretic translation I found in the Jewish Publication Society, that is actually a translation of the Hebrew words.
Yeah.
That doesn't exist. I mean, English translations began as Greek translations of the Torah, Navi, and Mizmor, forming the Septuagint. And then the Septuagint, which were not very good translations, in fact, very poor translations. And by those who did not have the right frame of reference. This was done, you know, during the that period where Israel was torn apart between the religious zealots and the social liberals, and they were embodying many Greek ideals, and the Greek ideals really were as poisonous for them as were their religious rabbinical fundamentalism, which was coming at this time. And so it was these two things that in Alexandria, Egypt, created a jaundiced perspective to translate the Hebrew and the Torah, Nambi, and Mizmor into Greek, a language ill-suited to convey the spiritual insights from Yahweh. And so they're the ones that looked at the same words and with an improper perspective misconveyed them. But that's only the start.
They can look at these same translators that produce these products. They could certainly look at the same thing you and I look at.
They could to correct what they have, because they got to what they have by then failing to recognize that the Septuagint was a really lousy translation of the Hebrew, and that the Septuagint was very poorly maintained, unlike the Hebrew versions of the same text, unreliably maintained, an absolute disaster. And that it then was translated into Old Latin, and then the Old Latin became very free and full of disparities, and that Jerome, Aronius is our new name for him, wrote the Pope and said, you know, what I'm going to do is I'm going to blend all of these divergent variations of Old Latin into one text. Will burn all the old text and will claim that the one resulting text is the perfect word of God. And, of course, now it was like four translations and eight copyists removed from the original text and another language wholly ill-suited to convey Yahweh's meaning. And then the Septuagint, over 1,000 years later, was translated into Anglo-Saxon. Not the Hebrew, not even the Greek, but the not even the Old Latin, but the Vulgate was translated into Anglo-Saxon, and from Wycliffe's first variation, the King James was a revision six times over of that first one, and without anybody paying any attention along the way at all to Hebrew. And so they're not looking at the same words. Now, someone like the New Living Translation, they would be without excuse.
Yeah.
Because they have a copy of the Codex Leningradus, which is the best copy we have of the Masoretic text. They have full publications now of the Dead Sea Scrolls, and they have all of the tools that we have available to us in terms of dictionaries and lexicons and word study devices. There's no part of that we're doing that they couldn't do, but they all recognize that if they did what we're doing, they wouldn't say what. Yeah, they wouldn't sell anything. Yeah, they would. No, they wouldn't be. They wouldn't even be employed. Yeah, it gets back to the Falwell story exactly. But it's amazing that they don't get it, and that the translations can be so different. So then God, in the third statement, and recognize that I'm only giving references to a chapter and verse because it's just so somebody can go and verify this for themselves and check it, because there are no chapter and verse in God's parlance, and that is because that when you break things down into chapter and verse, and you don't recognize the contextual relationship between things in a discussion, you have no hope of being able to translate it correctly. And that's one of the great affirmations is we began this program by talking about the work that you were doing on Bereshith 6:5 and 6:6, and how 6:5 is so butchered in every English translation, and all they would have had to have done to not make the mistake that they all did is to consider what follows in 6:6 and recognize that it's all one discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't do it. So this is what follows, and it is related to what he just said. The rebellion against God as Father. He says, a cow. And you have to understand, now you could just leave it as cow. But if you just leave it as cow, you're going to miss the entire meaning here. Because the Hebrew language was conceived by God for a specific purpose, which was to convey the nature of the covenant relationship so that we could understand it and act upon it. And so every word was specifically designed by him for this purpose. So you've got to look at what does the Hebrew word cow also mean that's going to shed light on this and make sure you convey it. Because if you don't convey it, you're going to think he's talking about a bovine. He ain't talking about a cow here. He's using the cow as a symbol of something, and the symbolism is the following. One who looks, sees what's around him, and views the world from the proper perspective, and is aware of and recognizes his creator, and the one who gave birth to him. So he's saying a cow, which in the Hebrew word for cow means one who is observant, recognizes his creator. You know, even a cow, because he is observant, recognizes his creator. And an ass, a stubborn domestic beast of burden, his lord. You know, if you're an ass, you know your lord.
You're a jackass.
If you're a jackass, you know your lord. Unfortunately, your lord ain't God. But, you know, it's a beautiful thing that he associates the cow, the source of nurturing, the source of nurturing milk, the cow, the animal with a pleasant disposition who is observant of the world around it, recognizes its creator. But the ass, the stubborn, belligerent, aggressive beast of burden, yeah, what it knows is its Lord. Yisrael, individuals who struggle and fight with God, does not know and remains unaware. My people have failed to consider the connection and thus do not understand.
Still don't.
And by the way, that is the pathway to understanding. Connections.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I began the show and I was talking about what Trump had to say to negate, in fact, to turn the 4 minutes of con into a triumph for Trump as opposed to the thing that sunk Trump. And all he would have had to say is, thank you very much for proving my point. I'm sad that you've lost your son. Would it ever dawn on you who killed him?
I would ask who sent him into these wars.
Yeah, you could do, but of course he would have been sent into the wars by the Bushes, and so that would not have been politically expedient.
It starts back from the whole administration.
Right.
The administration has got us in this mess, and then fight these stupid wars.
I know, but Trump wants to be. What you're saying is would appeal to enlightened people who understand that the first condition of the covenant is to walk away from your country. But just for his own cause.
His own case, yes.
All he had to do is to say, thank you for proving my point. Mr. Khan. Well, I'm saddened for your loss. Didn't it ever dawn on you that your son was killed by a fundamentalist Muslim?
Yeah. Even more pointed.